a group of spiritually minded students at Auburn University. And I know sometimes we think that higher education is so corrupt that there are no spiritually minded students who are there. But at Auburn University, a big group of spiritually minded students got together. They were off campus. They just wanted to be together. And they sang some songs. Well, it turned out that somebody in that group wanted to be baptized. They didn't have any place where they could baptize them because they were not at a building like this. We have a baptistry. They were not at a building like this. They were just gathered at some sort of a gathering spot there on the campus. Out in front, there was a lake. So they decided that right then and there, they would walk out into the lake and they would baptize this fellow. They wound up baptizing over 200 people that just decided that this was something that they needed to do. A great, great opportunity to preach. And, you know, there were some people that got all upset about that. Because I guess the coach of the football team was there and he helped to baptize this person. And so they want this coach to be fired. That's kind of the way that things go. And, you know, we live in a world that can be, I don't know, a difficult place to live sometimes, a place where we worry about the world around us. Does anybody else worry about things that go on around them? I have to tell you, I fly an American flag up for my hands. That's just my choice. That has nothing to do with Christianity. But things began to be so chaotic that I went down and took down my flag because I was worried. I was anxious for what was happening in the community that I live in. Now, my flag is back up. I'm not as worried about it, but there was a time I was really worried. And, you know, the Spirit teaches us some habits that can help us overcome that kind of worry. One of the habits that the Spirit teaches us is knowing peace. And if we know peace, we can overcome a great deal of anxiety. Colossians, the third chapter, at verse 15, Paul said, "Let the peace of Christ rule in your hearts, since as members of one body, you're called to peace." Let the peace of God rule in our hearts. Where does all of the anxiety that we feel come from? You know, 40 million Americans have been diagnosed with clinical symptoms of anxiety. And what that means is that it's an anxiety that affects their ability to live their lives. It so paralyzes them that they really just can't function. What causes that? Well, the best way to understand the causes of anxiety are to look at those situations that existed in the past and to try to understand where their anxiety came from. So I looked at the Exodus generation, the generation of folks that came out of Egypt. This is a great blessing, wasn't it? But there was some anxiety associated with this. Notice the 13th chapter, beginning at verse 17. Moses sends out 12 spies to go look at the land of Canaan. They've been promised that this is going to be given to them. They're journeying toward it. They're coming up to the edge of the land of Canaan, and Moses sends out 12 spies. That just seems like a prudent thing to do to me. So the spies go out. Here's what it says, Numbers the 13th chapter, beginning of verse 17. When Moses sent the 12 spies to explore Canaan, he said, this was their charge, go up through the Negev into the hill country. See what the land is like, whether the people who live there are strong or weak, few or many. What kind of land do they live in? Is it good or bad? What kind of towns do they live in? Are they walled or are they unwalled? Or are they unwalled or are they fortified with a wall? How's the soil? Is it fertile or is it poor? Are there trees in it or not? Do your best to bring back some of the fruit of the land. It was a season of first ripe pears. I remember when I moved to Alaska, it was a bit furtive about moving to Alaska. So much so that she was ready to chain herself to a telephone pole in California because she really didn't want to go to a place where it snowed. She was worried, and she had cause to be worried. She'd never been there. She didn't know anything about it. Well, he continues. So they went up, they explored the land, the desert of Zin, as far as Rehob, toward Lebo Hamath. They went up to the Negev, through the Negev, came to Hebron, where Ahiman, Shishai, and Talmai, the descendants of Anak, lived. Hebron had been built 7 years before Zion in before Zun in Egypt. When they reached the valley of Eshcol, they cut off a branch bearing a single cluster of grapes. Two of them carried it on a pole between them. Can't imagine what these grapes must have been like, along with some of the pomegranates and figs. That place was called the Valley of Eshcol because of the cluster of grapes the Israelites cut off there. At the end of 40 days, they returned from exploring the land. They came back to Moses and Aaron and the whole Israelite community at Kadesh in the desert of Paran. There they reported to them and to the whole assembly and showed them the fruit of the land. Then Moses gave this account, or they gave Moses this account. We went through the land to which you sent us, and it does flow with milk and honey. Good land. Here's its fruit. But people who live there are powerful. The cities are fortified and very large. We even saw descendants of Anak there. The Amalekites live in the Negev. The Hittites and the Jebusites and the Amorites live in the hill country. The Canaanites live near the sea and along the Jordan. Then Caleb silenced the people. He said, we should go up and take possession of the land, or we will certainly do it. They were anxious. But Caleb says, let's go take the land. Caleb had some knowledge. The men who had gone up with him said, we can't attack those people. They're stronger than we are. They spread among the Israelites a bad report about the land that they had explored. They said, the land we explored devours those who live in it. All the people we saw there are of great size. We saw the Nephilim there. These are the descendants of Anak, and they came from the Nephilim. We seem like grasshoppers in our own eyes, and we probably look the same to them. They were worried. There are other things that cause us anxiety beyond just the unknown. Think about the early Jewish converts. This is what Paul wrote to them in Hebrews 13, verse 3. Continue to remember those in prison as if you were together with them in prison, and those who are mistreated as if you yourselves were suffering. Remember your leaders who spoke the word of God to you. Consider the outcome of their way of life. Many of those leaders had been in prison. Some were beaten. Some were even killed. He says, think about those leaders. Imitate their faith. Sometimes the things that we know about scare us. And we live in a world where there are some things that evil people do that cause us great anxiety. Think about the Roman oppressed Christians. This is interesting because these Roman oppressed Christians are being given a promise that they're going to overcome, that the evil people that they live with are going to be defeated. And you would think that that's all it takes to know that there's no reason to be anxious. The beast was given a mouth to utter proud words and blasphemies. That's the Roman Empire, I think. To exercise its authority for 42 months. It opened its mouth to blaspheme God and to slander his name and his dwelling place and those who live in heaven. And then there is this. Heard another voice from heaven saying, come out of her, my people, so that you will not share in her sins, so that you will not receive any of her plagues. Separate yourself from the evil people, because plagues are coming on them. First injured, piled up to heaven. God has remembered her crimes. Give back to her as she has given. Pay her back double for what she has done. These wicked people are going to be devoured. The angel says, pour her a double portion from her own cup. Give her as much torment and grief as the glory and luxury that she gave herself. In one day, her plagues will overtake her. Death, mourning, and famine. She'll be consumed by fire. Mighty is the Lord God who judges her. When the kings of the earth who committed adultery with her and shared her luxury see the smoke of her burning, they'll weep and mourn over her. Terrified at her torment, they will stand afar off and they will cry, woe, woe to you, great city. You mighty city of Babylon, in 1 hour your doom has come. The merchants of the earth will weep and mourn over her because no one buys her cargo anymore. Cargoes of gold, silver, precious stones, pearls, fine linen, purple, silk, scarlet cloth, every sort of citron wood and articles of every kind made of ivory, costly wood, bronze, iron, marble, cargoes of cinnamon and spice, of incense and myrrh and frankincense, of wine and olive oil, of fine flour and wheat, cattle and sheep, horses and carriages, and even human beings sold as slaves. They will say, the fruit you long for is gone for you, gone from you. All your luxury and splendor have vanished, never to be recovered. The merchants who sold these things and gained their wealth from her will stand afar off, terrified at her torment. Woe, woe to you, great city, dressed in fine linen, purple and scarlet, glittering with gold, precious stones and pearls. In 1 hour, such great wealth has been brought to ruin, and it should have been, right? It was gained through oppression. They sold people as slaves. Every sea captain, all who traveled by ship, the sailors, all who earned their living from the sea, will stand afar off. This is anxiety-producing. When they see the smoke of her burning, they will exclaim, was there ever a city like this great city? They'll throw dust on their heads. With weeping and mourning, they cry out, woe, woe to you, great city, where all who had ships on the sea become rich through her wealth. In 1 hour, she's been brought to ruin. You'd have thought they'd be glad. But it's anxiety producing. When someone says to me, the wicked will suffer, even that causes anxiety for me. It's an anxiety that's kind of like Habakkuk felt. Habakkuk had brought his complaint to God. He said, how long will I behold what I am beholding? The righteous suffer. God says, don't worry about it, Habakkuk. I'm going to do a work in your day which you will not believe even though I tell you. I'm going to raise up the Babylonians. They're going to bring judgment on these wicked men in Jerusalem. And they did. And you know what Habakkuk's response to that was? Wait a minute, God. That's a little more serious than I had in mind. Some good people will be hurt. So I'm even anxious when good things happen. You know, the fact is that Jesus knows that Christians will face anxiety-producing events and challenges. He said this in Matthew, the 6th chapter, beginning at verse 25. Therefore, I tell you, do not worry about your life, what you'll eat or drink, or about your body, what you'll wear. Is not life more than food, and the body more than clothes? Look at the birds of the air. They do not sow or reap or store away in barns, and yet your Father feeds them. Are you not much more valuable than they? Can any of you, by worrying, add a single thought to your life? A single moment to your life? Why do you worry about these things? Why do you worry about clothes? See how the flowers in the field grow? They do not labor or spin. I tell you that not even Solomon in all his splendor was dressed like one of these. If that's how God clothes the grass of the field, which is here today and tomorrow, is thrown into the fire, will he not much more clothe you, O you little faith? So do not worry, saying, what shall we eat? What shall we drink? What shall we wear? The pagans run after all these things. Your heavenly Father knows that you need them. First his kingdom, his righteousness, and all these things will be given to you as well. Therefore, don't worry about tomorrow. Tomorrow will worry about itself. Each day has enough trouble of its own. Then Jesus went with his disciples to a place called Gethsemane. If Jesus knew about anxiety-producing events, didn't he? He knew what he had just said in Matthew 6. Matthew 26. This is the record of what happened when Jesus faced anxiety. Jesus went with his disciples to a place called Gethsemane. He said to them, sit here while I go over there and pray. took Peter and the two sons of Zebedee along with him, he began to be sorrowful and troubled. He said to them, "My soul is overwhelmed with sorrow to the point of death. Stay here and keep watch with me." Going a little further, he fell on his face to the ground and he prayed, "My Father, if it is possible, may this cup be taken from me. Yet not my will, but as you will." Then he returned to his disciples and found them sleeping. "Couldn't you men keep watch with me for 1 hour?" he asked Peter. "Watch and pray, so that you will not fall into temptation. The spirit is willing, but the flesh is weak." He went away a second time and he prayed, "My Father, if this is possible for this cup to be taken away, if it is not possible, excuse me, for this cup to be taken away, unless I drink it, may your will be done." When he came back, he found them sleeping again because their eyes were heavy. So he left them, went away once more, and he prayed the third time, saying the same thing. Then he returned to his disciples. He said to them, "Are you still sleeping and resting? Look, the hour has come. The Son of Man is delivered into the hands of sinners." Jesus knows what it's like to face anxiety. He knows what it's like to be worried. And because he knows what it's like, he can help us. One day Jesus said to his disciples, this is Luke the 8th chapter, "Let's go over to the other side of the lake." So they got into a boat, they set out, they sailed, and he fell asleep. A squall came down the lake so that the boat was being swamped and they were in great danger. They should have been worried. The disciples went and woke him, saying, "Master, Master, we're going to drown. He got up, he rebuked the wind and the raging waters. The storm subsided, and all was calm. "Where's your faith?" he asked his disciples. In fear and amazement, they asked one another, "Who is this? He commands even the winds and the water, and they obey him." The disciples were worried, but Jesus helped them. How did he know they were worried? Because he faced anxiety too. The qualities of a spirit-led life help us to overcome anxiety. Look at what Paul wrote to Timothy. "The spirit that God gave us does not make us timid." That's what anxiety does. It makes us timid, afraid. God gives us power and love and self-discipline. Now, how do we acquire these kinds of things? How do we acquire a knowledge of power and love and self-discipline? This is what he says in Philippians 4. "Finally, brothers and sisters, whatever is true, whatever is noble, whatever is right, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is admirable, if there's anything excellent or praiseworthy, think on such things." That's number one. Think on those things. "Whatever you've learned or received or heard from me or seen in me, put it into practice." That's number two. "And the God of peace will be with you." Well, let's conclude with Proverbs 3, beginning at verse 1. Wise man, in the first part of Proverbs, apparently is talking to someone who is like his son. Maybe he's talking to his son, but This is what a father would tell to a son. This is what Jesus would tell to us. This is what God would tell to Jesus. My son, don't forget my teacher. Keep my commandments in your heart. They will prolong your life many years and bring you peace and prosperity. Let love and faithfulness never leave you. Bind them around your neck. Write them on the tablet of your heart. Then will you win favor and a good name in the sight of God and man. Trust in the Lord with all your heart. Lean not on your own understanding. In all your ways, submit to Him. He'll make your path straight. Do not be wise in your own eyes. Fear the Lord and shun evil. This will bring health to your body and nourishment to your bones. Are you like me, worried about things? Let God lead you. We think that that's what you want to do. And we're here to help each other do it. Remember, think on these things, then put it into practice. You have to have both of those things. Put on Jesus. He knows what you feel. He understands because He was there. Baptism is available to all. Unlike they were at Auburn University, we do have a place where we can baptize you right here, right now. We don't have to go look for a lake like they did. But if you want to put on Christ, it'll be the best decision you ever make. If you've let anxiety ruin your life, return to Him. He'll give you the peace that you so desperately need. Ask Him. He's promised that He will forgive and that He will welcome us back with open arms.